We have the privilege of listening to John Mowry share with us today, and he is speaking from Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely, and let us run with the perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such hostility against himself from sinners, so that you may not grow weary or lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your own blood.
It is indeed a privilege this morning to speak about this familiar text. Paul uses this metaphor. He's been using these metaphors throughout the various texts. He talks about a battle is not with flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this age. So there's that image of the fighter. And then in Timothy, he speaks about, I've fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And here, he uses the metaphor of someone running a race, of an athlete. And for me, it's a little bit about a race that is a marathon, but also about a relay. And it seems that what has happened is that he's handing us, it's our time to run. There have been people who've run before us, thousands, millions of people. He talks about the crowd of witnesses. Now the baton is in our hand. What are we going to do with it? We are all in a race. Whether you want it or not, we are all in a race. I was watching the kids this morning as they were sitting down here. And I was thinking, are they in a race? When I was a kid, around 11, 12, I was surrounded with seven brothers. I was the youngest brother. All of them, they used to wear long pants. For me, I was wearing these tiny shorts. And there was only one thing I wanted to be. I wanted to wear long pants. And I said, I'm going to be a man, then I would have no accountability towards my parents. That was my risk. I was dying to grow old. Now, I'm here in Canada in January. I said, I want to wear shorts. The context here is he talks about the description of the race, and Paul says, let's run with perseverance. What race are you in? What are your goals for the next 5 years? There's this image of us being travelers, being sojourners, being people, a people on the move. We should be moving towards something. And when Paul was writing to this group of people, the Hebrews, there was a context. The church was getting old. They were setting into the world. They were losing this type of wartime mentality. They were just drifting. Are we drifters? So the message that was so valid then is also valid to us today. We are in a world. Where are we running that race? We are running that race in the world. And the concept of the world, the idea of the world is very interesting because the idea of the world is that it is something that pulls us away from our race. It takes us on a different path. I have a quotation from Eugene Peterson here. And he says, it is not difficult in such a world to get a person interested in the message of the gospel. It is terrifically difficult to sustain the interest. There is a great market for religious experience in our world. There is little enthusiasm for the patient acquisition of virtue, little inclination to sign up for a long apprenticeship in what earlier generations of Christians called holiness. Religion in our day has been captured by the tourist mindset. So many have a bent for religious entertainment. We're just here to be entertained, and then we move on. So that concept of the world is very, I would say, very strong. But let me give you my definition of the world. I was thinking about that for the last 3 weeks. My definition of the world is where your feet take you. Where do your feet take you? Work, home, entertainment, play. That's one part of it. My other idea of the world is your activities. How do you spend your time? What are the activities that you're involved in? And when I talk about activities here, I'm also talking about the virtual world. Today we need to talk about the virtual world, where with a click, with just one click, you can go totally into a different world. You can be watching a lot of stuff. For me, this is my concept of the world. And in that concept of the world, we are challenged not to look at it, but also to keep our eyes fixed on just one thing, Jesus Christ. He said, keep your eyes fixed. As you're moving from these places, as you're moving from activity to activity, one thing I ask you as a Christian, it is said that it is a race that is set before us. It's already been set. Once you sign up for this thing known as Christianity, as a follower of Jesus Christ, this is what we are called to. Keep our eyes fixed on just one thing, Jesus Christ. We talk about, so this is the place where we are running. This is our arena. This is the stadium. This is the track. This is the field where we are running. As we learn, as we read the word, we are also reminded that even when before we were born, all the days were planned for us. All the days planned for me were written in your book before I was one day old. The psalmist tells us that when we were being woven together, when we were being knitted together in our mother's womb, God knew about us. God, Jesus, knew about your name. Where can I go from your spirit, the psalmist says? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make up my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Jeremiah, I know, and there's the quote here, I know I have plans for you, declares the Lord, plans for the welfare and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. You will call upon me and come and pray to me. I will hear you. You will seek me and you will find me. This is the type of race that we are called to run. This is the type of mission we are asked to join in. We are known, we are told that we are God's masterpiece. I don't know if you looked yourself up in the mirror this morning before coming to church. I don't know whether you saw a masterpiece or something else or somebody else. But the word tells us that we are created anew. And we are called to do the good things that God has planned for us. God knows every single event that would have happened in your life. Every single one. We have a destiny. The psalmist tells us, I don't know your age this morning, but the psalmist tells us we got 70 years. And if we are a little bit stronger, we got 80. Anything beyond that, just a bonus, isn't it? This is what the psalmist tells us, isn't it? 70 years, 80 years. In the scheme of eternity, the psalmist also tells us this is just insignificant. It says, we are here like grass. We are cut in the morning, and the evening we wither and we dry out. That's what the psalmist tells us. We all have a destiny. Very often we are thinking about what job are we going to do? What work are we going to do? We wonder how happy I am. I have a friend who tells me, and he says to me, I don't care about happiness anymore. I don't care about it. I don't need to be happy. I want to be focused. How much money we have? What type of car we drive? Even to a certain extent, whether we are healthy or not. Just an insignificant amount of time. I'll tell you a story that happens to me a couple of years ago. I'm still working for the government. I was applying for a job. And I was focused on that job for so long. Prayed about it. Talked about it. Shared with my friends about it. Asked some of my prayer partners to pray for me about it. Prepared for it. I spent incredible amount of time just focusing on that one job I wanted to get. I got it. I was so thankful. The next morning, I was walking downtown, and I met another colleague who used to work with me. His name is Sam. I said, Sam, how are you doing? Haven't seen you for ages. We work in the same building. He said, it's kind of funny. We never met for all these years. And then all of a sudden, he told me what job he was doing. I realized he was one step ahead of me. One step. His job was higher than mine. And immediately, I got so discontent about my whole thing. I felt, wow, I became jealous. I kept walking. And then I said to myself, John, get real here. You prayed all this time. Instead of rejoicing, look at you. So very often, this is what we are focused on, isn't it? We just want to move ahead. We just want that one step ahead. And once we get there, we become discontent again, and we keep moving. What race are we on? Where are we heading? Before you were born, God gave you, had in mind for you, a unique collection and selection of talents, of gifts, of path. It is so unique. It has to do with your destiny. And it is not the destiny of your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, member of your community. It is your own. Maybe if we are restless, maybe if we are tired, maybe if we are depressed, maybe it's a little bit, maybe if we are discontent, maybe if we are not satisfied with the status quo, maybe we have not found that destiny yet. Maybe we need to work harder. Maybe we need to pray more. Maybe we need to seek what that destiny is all about and then keep moving forward. Something happened here. Alan, I can blame this on you now. Okay. Thank you. We had plan B. We are called to be focused. So we should not be focusing on that one job from my perspective. We should not be focusing on that one job. We should be looking at God's goodness in the past. His closeness to you in your present and the power to help you in your future. We are supposed to keep our eyes on Christ. To avoid looking at what everybody else is doing, is being, is saying. When our eyes are on Christ, they are not on the world. And when our eyes are on the world, they are not on Christ. Let's fix our eyes on the one who provides all direction, all hope, and all purpose by having focused eyes. What does that mean, to have focused eyes? Focused eyes. Understand he is the one who provides all good things. Focused eyes allow the world to become blurry. Focused eyes spend time connecting with God on a daily basis. Focused eyes see those that are in need. Those who need love. Focused eyes do not focus only on their own needs, but also on others, our brothers and sisters in Christ. I don't know for how long I've been speaking. I was checking the news this morning, and then throughout the week, and I looked a little bit about how many Christians died because of the faith. From the minute I spoke, if I've spoken for more than 6 minutes, it says, in the world, every 6 minutes, a Christian dies for their faith. Every 6 minutes. Focused eyes are not only focused on TV. Focused eyes know that God has big plans for them. Focused eyes don't look at circumstances. Focused eyes know that God has not and will not forget them. Focused eyes know that God is alive, well and aware of all things. And focused eyes know that God will rescue and restore. Focused eyes do not veer off the road. They avoid dark places. And these dark places can be the virtual places. And it is a result that is full of Christ, abundant in love, strong in purpose, weak in pride, engaging in relationship, authentic in grace, and powerful in faith. We all want that, don't we? So we talk about where we are running. We talk about what the race is all about. We talk about being focused. And then Paul is telling us, think about the weight. You should lighten your load. And he talks about two things. He talks about not only sin, but the good things, the weight that prevents us from running fast, from being focused. These weights may not be sinful, but they could be hindrances. They prevent us from going faster. I'll tell you a story that happens to me this Thursday. I got home. I said, I know that I'm going to speak. I'm going to be focused. I'm going to spend some time reading the Word. After I ate, I sat down in front of the TV, and I watched the Maple Leaf game. And as I sat down, I said, I'm going to watch only the first period. I watched the first period. I got up from the chair, and I said, I'm going to read now. I'm going to prepare myself. I ran by the TV again. I said, no, I'll watch the second period. Oh, you're laughing. You were there too, aren't you? I got some peanuts. I said, I'm going to read again, right? I watched the third period. Hey, the Leafs won. I spent 3 hours watching that game. And a bunch of men trying to put a puck in a little net. That's what I did. It's a good thing. I do not watch every single time. But it was a chunk of 3 hours I spent of my life watching the game. It was fun. But is that an hindrance? Is that a hindrance in my life? If I keep watching, it's a good thing. It's not sinful. It's a good way to entertain oneself, to relax. I worked that day. I can justify myself. I got up around 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning. I got home around 6 o'clock. I worked hard that day. I need to enjoy myself. 3 hours. So they are not bad things. They are not sinful. But there could be weights that prevent us from running, prevent us from focusing. What are your weights? I know mine. What are yours? Is it surfing the net? Is it YouTube? Is it talking on the phone? Is it TV? Are you reading books that have no value? There's a good book to read. Natalie talked about it this morning. Is it addiction? Is it passion? Is it anger? Is it fear? Is it your past? What are the weights that are pulling you down? Paul says, they may be good things in themselves. They may not be sins. Get rid of it. He also talked about the sin that easily entangles us. Paul tells us to, in Matthew, says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and he will provide you all your needs. The things I'm talking to you about this morning, all things you know. You've read this. You know these verses. You can probably recite them better than I can. For me this morning, my goal is to kind of encourage you on that road and encourage myself on that road, on that race, because right now you have that baton in your hand. Are you going to run? Are you going to drop it? In the previous chapter, in Hebrews 11, Paul has shown all the people who've gone before us. David, Samson, all the people who've gone before us, those who kept the faith. One thing we know for sure, when it talks about sin, we need to be focused on it. We need to try to get rid of it. But the one thing that we need to remember, in that hall of fame that we just walked through in the previous chapter, All of these individuals, they failed miserably, haven't they? It's not a matter of whether we're going to fall or whether we're going to fail. It's just a matter of we've already done that. And we will. But we are called to getting up and starting to run again. Not to be focused in the areas where we fail, but to keep our eyes always fixed on Jesus, to be always focused upon him. I have a quote here, and it says, "Watch your heart. Watch your heart throughout your life. Examine it. Listen to it. And see what it prevents it from uniting itself with the Lord. Let this be your supreme and constant study. And with God's help, you will easily observe what estranges you to him, what draws you to him, and what unites you to him. It is the evil spirit more than anything else that it stands between our hearts and God. He estranges us from God by the several vices, by the desires of the flesh, and by worldly pride." Watch your heart. We need to get rid of this weight. We need to think about the sin. We need to focus. We need to watch our hearts. If we are going to run the race, we need to remember that our time is very short. I have a quote here. If we are going to live adequately and maturely as the people of God, we need more data to work from than our experience can give us. We need other experiences. The community of experience of brothers and sisters in the church. The centuries of experience provided by our biblical ancestors. A Christian who has David in his bones, Jeremiah in his bloodstream, Paul in his fingertips, and Christ in his heart will know how much and how little value to put on his own momentary feelings and the experience of the past week. We must extend the boundaries of our lives beyond the dates enclosed by our birth and death and acquire an understanding of God's way as something larger and more complete than the anecdotes in our private diaries. Otherwise, we will always be mistaking a sore throat for a descent into hell. Twenty-five years in the ministry of Alan and Beth Davey. And when they came along, they brought two kids. Now there are more following. 25 years ago, I was here. At that time, we used to have also a service, an evening service, downstairs. Many of you were there. And I remember Alan speaking, and I remember him standing. It was a different Alan then, I can tell you that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And he said, "I remember this very well. And I'm not doing this for brownie points." I remember he said, he was reading and he said, "For me is to know Christ and the power of his resurrection. And in a very Alan's way, he said, "Don't you want that?" This stayed with me. This is commitment to this church. A lot of you were there. You've changed a bit. Again, the psalmist tells us we have approximately 80 years or so. For 25 years you've been here, I have seen you change. A couple of years ago, Beth said to me, "John," she looked at me and said, "John, you're getting gray." But let me tell you what has happened to you over 25 years. You've got older, haven't you? I'm not looking at anyone else or someone particularly here, but some of you have got balder. While we have to go on the other side, some of you have got hairier on in your face. You are more wrinkled. You're slower. Some of you have put on weight. Some of you have got thinner. Some of you, you can hear very well. Some of you are less healthy. I was more handsome then. Natalie says, "You know, I think my dad had perms then." It's true, I remember the locks. Remember that very well. And I was saying, "Who is that hippie dude?" But the one thing we have to remember, we are getting closer, all of us. We are getting closer to the finish line. We are getting closer to God. He says he's the author of a faith. He's the one who started it all. He called your name. Out of the billions of people throughout all these centuries, he called your name even when before you were born. And he says, "Keep your eyes fixed upon me." Maybe you're getting weaker. Let me ask you this question. Who is this one person who is cheering you on when you get discouraged? You can go to this one person and say, "I'm tired. I'm getting discouraged. I need you to cheer me on. I need you to cheer me to get to the finish line." Who is this one person in your life who is trying to get you to the finish line when your feet are getting heavy, when you're getting tired, when you just want to drop it all and say, "I don't want to do this anymore"? You're older. You have lots of experience. Who are you cheering? Is there anybody else that you're cheering? Someone who is young in the faith, who needs you? There is a mentoring program here. Who are you cheering? The baton is in our hand. It's up to us whether we want to keep running. The one thing we have to remember, we cannot do this on our own. We will stumble, we will fail, we will fall. It's very hard to do it on our own. That's why we are given a church. That's why we are given a community who can help us to get over the line when what the races, those who run, the runners normally talk about hitting the wall. Just to get us to that other side. Who is helping you in your life? Who is this one person that will help you to go over the top? We are getting closer. We are getting nearer. Can you hear the people who are cheering you? Can you hear? I'm just going to mention a few names. At the line, I can name you two people waiting for me. My mom, Gladys. My dad, Christian Mori. They prayed for me. My mom prayed for me every single day at 5 o'clock in the morning for all the children. They're waiting for me at the finish line. What about Grace and Jim Davy? What about Betty Nolte? What about Peter Brown? They're waiting for us. Waiting for you at the finish line. Keep our eyes focused on the author and finisher of the faith. In Jesus' name, amen.